National news from a grassroots perspective.
You're listening to Groundwire, community radio news from coast to coast.
I'm Wendy Luella Perkins.
And I'm Irina Skvortsova. This edition of Groundwire was produced on unceded Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee territories at CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario.
This special edition of Groundwire for the 2015 Homelessness Marathon, an overnight broadcast from February 25th to 26th, featuring local stories about homelessness by campus and community radio stations from across the country. This year, CFRC hosted the marathon. First up,
an Indigenous homeless drop-in center in Ottawa is closing due to a lack of funding, but the community is working hard to keep the doors open. Shirley Gagnon from CKCU 93.9 FM brings us this breaking news story.
I am Shirley Gagnon, former president of the Odawa Native Friendship Center in Ottawa. A couple of weeks ago, Odawa's homelessness program, Shewanjigamig Drop-In Center, known as 510 Rideau, lost 100% of its funding. It seems that Odawa did not attend a meeting where a decision was made that Aboriginal homelessness was not a priority. The decision was made by the City of Ottawa, ACAP, comprised of other Aboriginal community organizations, thereby distributing Odawa's portion of $400,000 between themselves. This is unfortunate, as Odawa was a founding organization which spurred the funding of these Aboriginal organizations. 510 has served the homeless community for 10 years, but in 5 weeks, it may close, pending on the mobilization of social resistance and support from the Ottawa community. We will hear from homeless clients on what 510 means to them. Then we will hear from the coordinator and also a community member. First, we'll hear from Padluck.
I'm originally from Cape Dorset. I had to move to Ottawa because the Nunavut government sent our people here for medical specialists or specialty like hemodialysis, which is what I require. And I was homeless for a long time. So 510 was a godsend to me when it first opened about 10 years ago. This place has helped me a lot, not only for medical appointments, bus tickets. I can come eat breakfast or lunch or supper here. I can do my laundry. Some men would come here and we speak our language. We can also do counseling or get referred to like a dry house. We want. The atmosphere is awesome. The staff is great. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. This place should stay open in my mind because there's a lot of homeless people here and they get quite a bit of help here.
Alex also uses the services at 510 Rideau.
I went right down. Like, I had everything. Two houses in the reserve. And left it all to my family and walked away. I was going downhill. So now I'm coming back out of it and feeling a lot better now. I was involved with a lot of stuff, so I just started to get my spirits and my hopes back up. I really opened my eyes to see how it is to live on the street and to be without. 510 has been really, really good for me anyways. The door opens up to Native culture, the community, and I feel really comfortable and welcome here. And as any place else, I don't think I would feel as good as I do when I come here. They have the Bannock bus. I volunteer for that, and I like that. I help people out, bring food and soup to the homeless people. If we had that in all the cities like Ottawa has, that'd be excellent.
Carrie Diabo is the coordinator at 510 Rideau.
This is not just a place where they come to gather. They have rules that they have to follow. One thing they like to do in the morning when they have breakfast is they watch the news, and then we have a discussion on what's going on that day. If they go to the mainstream, I don't think any of them have Aboriginal workers. And here we do a lot of cultural-based workshops, teachings. The city is expecting them to go to the mainstream services. A lot of them, they find that when they go there, there's a lot of racism. And so they feel like they don't belong there. If you have workers that don't work with Aboriginals, it could create kind of like a friction because English is not their first language. So they might speak English, but it's trying to get a point across. You have to explain it in a way that they're going to be able to understand it. We're concerned about the clients because they said, how do you feel about the closing? How is it going to affect you? And a lot of them just said, where are we going to go after? We're all going to be back on the street drinking.
Mr. Washes is a community member who spoke in support of keeping the center open.
The Indigenous people, the first people of Canada, who now find themselves homeless on their own homelands. It's a message to Indigenous women and Indigenous people of what happens to us, how we're discarded, how we're left out of everything. So that's the type of existence we have here in the nation's capital. And it's very sad what's going on in that. The only service provider for many of the people that come here is 510, and that so many of them have perished right downtown in Ottawa outside the Rideau Centre. They found people that have passed on. Since 2000, over 100 people have passed on, died of exposure, they call it, in the Ottawa area. And 100 of these people, they all access the services here at Centre 510 in Rideau. So it's very important that we keep it open. You know, it is a house of compassion.
This is Shirley Gagneau reporting from CKCU 93.1 FM on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Nation in Ottawa.
Our next story comes from Cambridge Bay in Nunavut, where a shelter helps women and children escape from violent situations. Mia Rachel from CFBI 97.7 FM brings us this report.
The Cambridge Bay Community Wellness Center Crisis Shelter provides temporary accommodation in a supportive environment for women and children dealing with domestic violence. My name is Mia Otokrak from CFBI 97.7 FM. I sat down with Fatou Mansari, the coordinator at the Wellness Center.
Women's shelter.
Okay. And talked about homelessness in Cambridge Bay and the importance of the women's shelter in our community. I'll get Fatou to introduce herself.
My name is Fatou Mansari, and I'm the Family Violence Prevention Coordinator for the Women's Shelter in Cambridge Bay.
Okay, and what kinds of services does this shelter offer?
Well, the kind of services we offer at the shelter is for women who are going through family violence, domestic violence, and just a temporary crisis shelter for women who are going through domestic violence.
And what are their stories usually? Why do they go to the shelter?
Well, it all depends. It varies from physical abuse, domestic abuse, some of them like homelessness for sure, and they have like 72 hours cooling off time, and then it all depends on their cases anyways, or to their situation.
And how many people go to the shelter, do you think?
Well, it all depends. Sometimes, like, we have one per month or two per month, maximum six per month, but the maximum capacity of the shelter is eight.
And why is it important to have a women's shelter in the community?
Well, it's important to have a women's shelter because women are more the victim. Women and their kids are more the victim of domestic violence, so that's why it's mainly for women and kids aged under 12 years.
And is there anything else you'd like to add about the shelter or anything happening with it?
Well, the only thing I would like to add to the shelter is nice, welcoming, homey place for all women going through domestic violence and abuse with their children, and we are always welcome there. We have resources for the women based on their needs, and again, as I say, it's a very welcoming place for any woman going through domestic violence and abuse.
This is Mia Otokiak reporting for Groundwire from CFBI 97.7 here in Cambridge Bay, traditionally called Eqalabdutiak by us Inuit here in Nunavut.
Zoran Klajic from CJAM 99.9 FM brings us our next report from a women's shelter in Windsor, Ontario.
You have reached the Welcome Center Shelter for Women. If you are in crisis and require emergency shelter services, please press zero now.
I'd given up hope. I was suicidal. It's hard when you don't have anything. A fork, a pillow, nothing. You're starting off with nothing. I had no hope. Ruth Coyle, I was a previous resident here. I had a previous relationship for 16 years and broke up. And he owned the house, you know, and we had a child together, so I had nowhere to go, and he brought me here to get started, you know, to get help.
How hard is it to survive from week to week?
It's very hard. Being on Ontario Works and trying to find a job there, I've applied in so many places right now, and no phone calls, no job interviews, and it's hard. It's really rough. It's hard to survive. I have my bad days, you know, where I look around my room and I think, wow, I have nothing, you know, I don't have a job, I don't have nothing. And, but then you think of your family, you know, I have a son and a picture of him, and I don't give up hope. You know, you have your bad days, and a lot of them here have their bad days because you're starting with nothing. I'm scared. I had no hope. I was scared to be here because I'm a county person. I'm not a big city girl, you know? So it was hard, and I didn't know anyone, and I was shy. I was a shy person to begin with, and they have changed me totally.
And then the successes are sometimes little, sometimes big. It could be making an appointment for abuse counseling that someone's needed for 20 years that they've never had the courage to make.
Brought to you by the CJAM News Department.
We're at the coldest night of the year. This is Don Maitland reporting from CIWS 102.7 Whistle Radio in Stouffville. And we have Owen Alton with us, who is Executive Director of Restore Canada.
Restore Method of Care Canada is trying to help people who are hungry, homeless, and in distress land in a healthy condition. There's so many people at risk of being, with one life event, catapulting them into a state of distress and urgency. There is a need for providing supports and structure. What Restore Method of Care is doing is training volunteers, compassion lead volunteers from church partners, to provide level care so that people land in a healthy condition that they can sustain on their own. If they're underemployed, we work with them to help them upgrade their employment so that they're fully employed and they have the right kind of income to meet their needs. Sometimes there's so many issues that are going on in a family, and they all have to be addressed concurrently. It makes it very challenging. What makes the Restore community most significant is that with a team of individuals and church partners collaborating, we can provide the resources to help people land on their feet. We're doing some stuff that would be considered outrageous, and yet sometimes it's not enough because people's troubles are just so severe. But I love the fact that when the outrageous situation presents itself, there's a team of people willing to collaborate to try to respond and meet that need.
A library that welcomes the homeless rather than turning them away. The Edmonton Public Library has an outreach program for homeless people in the city. It's a program to assist and counsel the homeless and customers with addiction, mental health problems, or financial issues. I spoke with the manager at Edmonton's Stanley A. Milner Library, Richard Thornley, and outreach worker Jared Kachuk, about what the library is doing to help those in need.
The Edmonton Public Library's outreach program is a program that was started about 4 years ago now. It was initially started under a grant from the provincial government, Safe Communities Innovation Fund. When the grant money expired, we mainstreamed the program essentially, and the staff now are paid EPL employees, and it's a regular part of Edmonton Public Library programming. In terms of what the program does, it works with customers at risk, customers who are living lives that may have certain kinds of challenges around homelessness, addictions, mental health, other health issues, financial issues. They have a pretty open door policy, and the three social workers who are part of the program will work with anyone who basically comes through the door.
Are there any difficulties in organizing something like this? Any problems that have come up in the last few years?
I like to characterize it as an infinite need and a finite resource. So one of the big challenges is around prioritization. You know, like there are so many people that they could be working with. Who do they work with and how do they decide who to work with? Some clients you might see, they're just like here and gone, and others are here and they've been seeing them now for 4 years.
What is it that you and the outreach workers do specifically?
Well, there's two main branches of our work. One is sort of more of based in relationships. I call it more of sort of spiritual work. A lot of people are so used to sort of being degraded, they're marginalized, that they're used to being excluded. Even when they're being helped by a social service, it may still be a fairly bureaucratic process. Because we found that people sort of need a friend as much as they might need a place to live or something like that. And then the second tier of the work is to actually try to connect people to resources. So, you know, if people are homeless, we'll try to get them housing. But if they don't meet the eligibility or, they sort of fall between the cracks, or if there's huge waiting lists, which often happen, we'll sort of try to find them something else that might be affordable or interim while they wait. We're sort of, we try to fill in the gaps sort of between the system and the person. I always have mixed feelings because to have an outreach project at the library is very progressive, very cutting edge, very effective. But at the same time, it's sort of an indictment of the system. When you have to put social workers in the library, it just shows how many people aren't being reached and supported.
This is Kurt Favish reporting for Groundwire from CKUA, 94.9 FM on Cree territory in Edmonton, Alberta.
Right now on the line, though, with me, I got someone very special. Her name is Trish, also known as DJ Roller Girl, right?
Yes, hello.
And we're talking about a Valentine for the homeless.
I learned a couple of years ago that this is a time of year when the donation bins get empty, but there is a great need, you know? And so it's basically a day of love for the homeless. So I'm collecting blankets as well as outerwear, scarves, hats, socks, mittens, whatever. They can be new, they can be used also, although gently used, which basically means not full of rips or stains.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also collecting things that they can eat, for example, little snack things, jerky, little snack packs of crackers and cheese, etc. So we're encouraging people to come and join us, and we're going to take different routes to the city, and we're going to go buy some hot coffee and hand out hot coffee.
And yeah. You know what? This is probably one of the coldest months, I think,
well,
is February.
This is another thing that it coincides well with this idea that it's exactly the right period to do this.
Yeah, and people don't realize it, too, because it's the time of giving, the season of giving is Christmas time, so then after that, it's like everyone forgets.
This is one of my biggest issues that I have with, as I say, the discussion is so often about what should we do with them, you know?
It's such
a problem, homelessness. This is not helping at all. I mean, first of all, no one really offers any solutions to actually fix it. And pushing them aside doesn't work, and moving them to other parts of the city doesn't work. And so maybe what we need to do is to acknowledge their presence. And it's a good way to start, at least, by acknowledging their presence and saying, yes, we realize you're here, and yes, you are a part of this city. You exist, you're a part of this community.
The Vancouver Community Network is a nonprofit organization that provides free internet and cell phone services to assist individuals and community groups so that information, resources, and opportunities on the internet is accessible to the homeless in Vancouver. Recently, the VCN has created a street messaging system to alert disadvantaged and vulnerable people in Metro Vancouver with information about shelter, food services, health alerts, and employment opportunities. With the increase of the homeless population in Vancouver, the VCN is working towards using these cell phone services to help end street homelessness. This is Tracy Axelson, the executive director of the VCN, here to talk more about the VCN and the street messaging system.
Vancouver Community Network is an ISP provider, so it's an internet service provider for people who want free access to the internet. We provide basically dial-up service for free in Vancouver, well, anywhere that this would be a phone line, as well as technical support for free, and, you know, we'll do web hosting, a lot of good work for organizations in the Lower Mainland. The services that we provide are primarily around internet communications technology.
Okay.
So we will not only help people understand how a computer works and give them training and support, we'll take them through how the internet works. We'll also, again, we provide free access to the internet. We do provide free Wi-Fi in some of the shelters here in Vancouver as well,
mm-hmm.
and free Wi-Fi in the Woodward's building as well.
This is Akira Shu reporting for Groundwire at CITR 101.9 FM on the traditional land of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations in Vancouver.
Megaphone is a magazine sold on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria by homeless and low-income vendors. Megaphone vendors struggle with such barriers as homelessness, mental illness, and addiction. Working as a vendor gives them an opportunity to earn an income, have a voice, and make change that works. Spoke with Jessica Hannon, the operations manager at Megaphone.
So Megaphone is a nonprofit that produces a magazine sold on the streets of Vancouver and Victoria by people who are homeless or low income. So people can sign up to be vendors as a way to earn an income and connect with the community. And then they sell the magazine on the streets, kind of like old-fashioned newsy style on the streets.
That's great. I've actually seen some of the vendors, one particularly at the Granville Island Market, and he's
right.
out there every day, and it's he works really hard. And so they purchase the magazine and then resell it, and they're able to make a living this way.
Yeah, exactly. So how it works is if someone is interested in becoming a vendor, they can come in, and the training is about an hour and a half. And after the training, they get their official license to sell and 10 free copies as a jump start. And that's meant so that there's not a barrier for anyone starting off. They get those 10 free copies and they sell them to customers on the street for $2 each. And they keep the profits from those sales. Uh-huh. After that, vendors buy each copy up front for 75 cents and sell them to customers for $2. So sort of a micro-business style where someone invests back in the product and then is able to continue selling and earning an income. So you can check us out on the web at megaphonemagazine.com. And we actually also have an app, a web app, which is the Megaphone Vendor Finder. So if you're interested in purchasing a copy, you can go to find.megaphonemagazine.com. And there's a map where you can click on the map to find areas where you work and spend time, and then it can show you where and when a vendor might be near you selling. So you can find a vendor and pick up a copy for $2.
Thanks very much, Jessica. This is Matt Stephenson reporting from Radio Emily on the traditional land of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations in Vancouver for Groundwire.
The Homelessness Marathon began in 1998 in Geneva, New York. On February 17, 2015, the 17th annual Homelessness Marathon took place in Sartosa, Florida. The concept moved north to Canada 13 years ago with CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal as the host station. Groundwire coordinator Ophira Horwitz sat down with Jeremy Alderson, the founder of the Homelessness Marathon, and Andy Edwards from CKUT, who co-founded the Canadian Homelessness Marathon.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Alderson. I'm the founder of the Homelessness Marathon. And the irony about it is that this was never intended to be a lasting national broadcast. When I first did it, I just wanted to rave and rant about how bad homelessness was. And I had the opportunity to have some extra time on the radio, and I got it out of my system. It really wasn't until the next morning when I talked to people and saw the response that I realized that the idea had kind of caught on. And when I realized this was striking a note with the audience, that only after the first broadcast was finished did I get the idea to put it up on the satellite and see if anybody would want to take it. And the first year we did a national broadcast, I think 7 stations were on board, and it just grew from there. We've now done 17 broadcasts.
And then, Andy, can you tell us how the Homelessness Marathon came to Canada?
My name's Andy Edwards, and how we started this marathon in Montreal was I was a squatter, homeless, And I had a job at the same time, but I was making minimum salary. So with my three children and everything, I couldn't afford to buy pay rent and everything on minimum salary, of course. So I ended up squatting with my three children. And one day, a young woman came and approached me by the name of Gretchen King. And Gretchen approached me and asked me if I wanted to do the homelessness marathon. And I said, I've never been on radio before. How are we going to do this? How are we going to set this up? And we got it all together. And in 2002, we brainstormed it. In 2003, we were on the air broadcasting from Don LaRue in Montreal. That was where we first started. And and it's been 13 years now.
One thing, by the way, if you're, Andy may not even know, is that the first couple of years that we did national broadcasts, we routed our webcast through Montreal. And Gretchen, who Andy referred to, was kind enough to help us with giving us the bandwidth to distribute our signal to stations through Montreal. And as a result, people were able to hear it in Montreal. People were in the studio listening and so forth, and they liked it. So that was how it originally came to Canada, was they were just doing us a favor by helping us distribute our signal.
My next question, Jeremy, can you tell our Canadian listeners a little bit about the American Homelessness Marathon this year?
One of the things that inspires me personally most about the broadcast is that it means a lot to homeless people. They feel a greater sense of dignity when they are taken seriously and talked to and can be on the air and asked about their lives like they're real people, which of course they are. But this year something actually happened that had never happened before. We had a woman and a man on, and the guy, they were older people, you know, middle-aged people. And I asked them if they were a couple, and the guy said, well, now that you mention it, and he got down on his knees and proposed to his girlfriend right there on the homelessness marathon. One homeless person proposing to another, and she accepted him. And it's the kind of moment, you know, we couldn't have scripted it, and we wouldn't have if we couldn't have, but I think it just underscores, which is the most important point, that when you use the words homeless people, the important word is people, not homeless. These are people just like anybody else, with loves, with fears, with needs. And, you know, what we try to do on the Homelessness Marathon above all else is just present homeless people as they really are and hope that that has an effect in and of itself.
At the microphone, we have Cindy and Dale. Cindy, you want to tell us what your story is?
I got hit by a car.
Okay. And you are disabled as a result of that?
Yep. Yes, I am disabled because of that.
And do you have any prognosis of ever getting out of that chair, or are you permanently disabled?
She's got to start working her legs and stuff again.
So maybe there's hope, but you got to have treatment. And it can't be easy getting treatment when you're homeless.
No, it's not.
It's very difficult.
Right. And where do the two of you sleep? Are you a married couple or are you a couple?
Well, what I wanted to do was actually propose to her.
Oh, no kidding.
Right now.
Would you? Go. We would be so honored by that.
Cindy.
Yes.
Would you be honored to be my wife?
Yes, Dale, I would.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well.
There you go.
Well, I can tell you in 17 years, that's the first time that's ever happened on this show, and it's kind of moving. And Dale, you want us to know, I take it, that homeless people still love each other, right?
That is correct.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced by Ophira Horowitz.
And Cameron Willis.
On location at CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston. My name is Irina.
And I'm Wendy.
Groundwire is a project of the National Campus and Community Radio Association.